This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you.
Hello, this is Jeanette Lefebvre, your guest host tonight on the People Speak Radio, filling in for Bassema Farhat. At the People Speak, we believe that the voices and actions of ordinary people make a difference. You can listen to the People Speak at bbsradio.com live every Tuesday night from 8:55 to 9:55 p.m. Eastern Time. You can also log into our website at peoplespeakradio.com to listen to us live, join us through our live chat on Pal Talk, or listen to the archives of previous shows. We broadcast 1 hour live to the USA, United Kingdom, Canada, and Australia. If you have questions for our guests, you can call 415-762-1160 or 712-432-0075, access number 318-116. You can also listen and call via your smartphone so you never have to miss the best guests on Internet radio. Tonight, our guest is Dr. John Aronson. Dr. Aronson has been with the Wright Medical Center in Iowa since 1985. He's a board certified with the American Board of Family Practice, is an adjunct clinical assistant professor with the University of Iowa, and helps to train third-year medical students. In addition to extensive other qualifications you will find in detail on the People Speak website, Dr. Aronson is a Defeat Autism Now physician, and it is in this area that he's with us tonight to share his knowledge. Now, Dr. Aronson, I've done some background research. My understanding is that you got into this as a family practitioner when one of your patients who has children with autism came to you seeking help. Would you like to fill us in your own words? Thank you.
Sure, I'd be glad to. It started back in 2005, I'll use the first names, and there was an article in the local paper about that, and the mom has given me permission to use their names. But Jody brought her son, Chance, to see me. He had been diagnosed with a form of autism, a pervasive developmental delay not otherwise specified. 3 years earlier, and the main difficulty that Chance had at that time was with communication. Mom could understand him. He would speak with mom, but anyone else hearing him speak would not know what he was saying. His speech was kind of garbled, I called it mush mouth, and his pronunciation was not very good. And I remember at the time that she brought him to see me, I'd ask her if they had started to teach sign language to him, because I know in some cases they've had better success communicating with the child if they're having a language delay by helping them communicate with sign language. And they really hadn't started to do that. But Jody came to me and said, well, I found this doctor on the Internet, Dr. James Neubrander in New Jersey, and he treats children with autism with methyl B12 injection, and I'd like to know if you would prescribe that for my son. So, not knowing Dr. James Neubrander or anything about methyl B12 injections, I told her, well, I will look into it and get back to you and tell you what I think about it. So I looked at his website. I downloaded some of the information that he had there. I called him up on the phone, talked to him in person, sent some emails to him. got some advice on how to proceed and looked at it, and I came to the summation that this was a vitamin. We really were not going to do anything that was going to harm him. The amount that he was getting was a small amount, and it was given as a sub-Q injection in the buttocks only every third day. So it wasn't something that had to be done several times a day, very similar to an insulin injection. And so I went back to Jody and said, if you're willing to try giving the shots, I'm willing to prescribe it, and let's see what happens. So we started that out, I think, in June of 2005. And very soon after he started using the shots, there was a noticeable improvement in his language. And I pulled out his old chart to look at some of the old notes from that. And he became more expressive with his language. He used more words, longer phrases. And the thing that I noticed when I saw him back 6 or 8 weeks later was I could understand him now. And this was the only thing that we had done different. We hadn't started any other medicine. He wasn't doing any other therapy. This was the only thing that we did different. And 8 weeks later, I could understand him. Sometime in August or September of that year, I remember I was at the local football game, and his grandparents approached me in the stands and said that they were just amazed at the changes that had taken place for him. For an example, this is what Jody told me at the time. Before he started the shots, he would say the sentence, "I tired me." And so he, you know, conveyed the concepts there of what he was saying. But then after we started the shots, then he would say the appropriate sentence, "I'm tired." Another example she gave, he would say, "I scared me." And then after he started using the shots, he would say, "I'm scared." He started interacting and responding better to his family. If someone in the family said, "I'm tired," he would say, "Me too." And in addition to noting improvements in his language, he became a little bit more responsive to his family and to his teachers. He still would have tantrums or get upset at times, but they weren't nearly of the magnitude as what they were before. And so we continued those for a long period of time. And after the initial 8 weeks, we then found out that because he responded so dramatically to this, I called and talked to Dr. Neubrander, and his advice was, well, this child obviously is a responder. I think you should give him the shots more frequently. And so in his case, we ended up proceeding to giving the shots on a daily basis. And he just made dramatic changes. And over the course of several years period of time of doing that, you know, he progressed to the point where he no longer needed an associate with him inside the classroom as, you know, what he did initially. So
okay, now how old was Chance when the treatment started?
He was born in 2000, so he was about 5 years old when we started.
Okay, is there any indication that a treatment like this, the responders are better if they're younger, or is it work equally well if the children aren't treated till they're older? My grandson is 13.
Well, it was interesting because I asked Dr. Neubrander that very question, and you know, while I appreciate the interview, I want to give credit where credit is due. And, you know, Dr. Neubrander was really the pioneer that discovered this. And so later on, as I started treating other individuals with that, he related a story to me of a child who was a teenager that had a diagnosis of autism, and they started treating with the B12 injections. And because I called back and I said, does this work on older kids? I mean, yes, I treated Chance. He's 5 years old. If you have someone who's 12 or 13, what can you expect then? And Dr. Neubrander related the story of a teenager in his practice who really was not communicating. And they had started the injections, and he tolerated those well, and I don't know what the interval was between when they started it and when they noticed this, but one day he came downstairs, sat down at the breakfast table, looked at his father, and said to him, do you like your job? And this was a child who wasn't speaking prior to that occasion. So, it's stories like that that catch your attention and say, and this is what I tell parents. I say, I can't guarantee you that any treatment or this treatment is going to work for your child, but I don't see that it's going to do any harm. And the only way you're going to know if it makes a difference or not is to try it. And so I haven't had that dramatic of change in a child that old who was not speaking, but I have treated older children and even young adults. One was a more profoundly impaired young adult in his mid-20s that lives in a group home. And the staff there had told me that after starting treatment, the number of regressions that they were charting in his group home had declined, that there was a noticeable improvement.
So the level of improvement depends on the severity of the autism spectrum behaviors, because I'm not sure if our audience is totally aware that autism falls on a spectrum of behaviors, from pretty much withdrawn and uncommunicative to, like, my grandson who doesn't really know when to stop communicating, and wide range of behaviors in there.
I would disagree with that for a little bit, because the treatment, how the person responds, is more a reflection of that individual person and not the degree of severity of the autism. It's really whether that person seems to respond to it or not. Dr. Neubrander himself, he will claim that if you follow his protocols and do it according to how he does it, that 90% of children will show some type of response. I'm not him. I do things a little bit different than what he does. But from my experience, I can say that, a good 75 to 80% of parents will notice some kind of change that they feel is beneficial, that they decide that they want to continue giving the shots, because they notice a beneficial change for it. So that's what we do when we initiate this therapy. And parents come to me with different stories, and some of them have already tried other kind of treatments. Some of them are doing different treatments for autism. And regardless of what they have done or are doing at the past, if they're coming to me for initiation of this therapy, I try to stress to them that they don't change anything else during this time that we initiate the therapy, so that we have an as objective of measure on what the influence of the B12 shots will be. If we start this vitamin and do this and do that and the B12 and they get better, we really can't attribute the cause directly to what it is. And so my protocol that I go by is I have them do this alone for 8 weeks, and then I see them back and we do I do a bit of a different assessment tool than what Dr. Neubrander does, but it gives me a numeric scale, and I'll use that to compare how the child is from their baseline to how they are 8 weeks later.
Okay. Now, I understand that the basic research on using methyl B12 comes from Dr. Neubrander. Can you explain in lay terms why they believe this is helping children with autism?
The simple explanation that I think most people can understand, and this is how I relate it to the parents, is that the methyl B12 is involved in the metabolic processes of the body that are responsible for decreasing inflammation and removing toxins. And there's a very complicated chemical pathway that has lots of branches and arms, and methyl B12 is one of those cogs in the wheel, so to speak. But that's the operating theory as to why it's beneficial, because it helps that mechanism of the body that it's involved in the production of glutathione, which is a sulfur-based chemical that is one of the chief chemicals responsible for removing toxins and reducing inflammation inside the body. So that's the theory that I explain as to why it's beneficial. And some of the times we look at the other cogs on that process of decreasing inflammation and removing toxins, and we'll use other areas or other supplements to try to address those and make that machinery work better inside the body.
Okay, now here's a question direct from my 13-year-old grandson. Is there any other way to take the B12 other than the injections that are equally effective? He has things about shots.
Right. A lot of parents have that same objection. You know, a lot of them are very squeamish and needle phobic, and they don't think that they can handle that. So let me answer that in two parts. One, yes, there are other ways that you can use the B12. There is a sublingual pill. There is an oral spray that's utilized. I've not used that, but I've heard that there's a nasal spray that can be utilized. There are some oral supplements that contain methyl B12. And we should specify for the listeners that this is not the B12 that you go down to your local corner pharmacy and purchase. There are five types of cobalamin, which is like the last name of the vitamin. And the one that we're utilizing in this case is methylcobalamin. If you go to your corner pharmacy and look at a vitamin B12 off the shelf, or look at the vitamin B12 ingredient in a multivitamin, it's typically going to say cyanocobalamin. The methyl group, the carbon and three hydrogens, is that methyl group. That's the key molecule that's involved in these chemical processes that take place. So it's important that people realize that it's the methylcobalamin that we're utilizing for this. And that seems to be the form that works the best. Of the forms of the methylcobalamin, though, the injection is the gold standard. And Dr. Neubrander will explain, and I've had similar experiences in some of my patients, that the oral form does not work as well as the injection. And part of that is related to the issue that the absorption is not going to be as good through the stomach. It's going to be broken down by the digestive process, and so the chemical is not going to get into the system the same as it does in the injections. Now, to elaborate further about the injections, yes, a lot of kids hate shots, but this is completely different, and I show the parents and I show the kids the size of the needle. It's barely more than a quarter inch long. It's 31 gauge. It's you're really hard-pressed to see it from across the room. It's not the same type of shot that you get your flu shot or any other vaccine with. That's a much larger needle. And as I said earlier, it's very similar to an insulin injection. And there's thousands of young children, even as young as 2 and 3, that have to take insulin every day in order to survive, and they get used to it. Many times I've found that... Go ahead.
Oh no, go ahead and finish your... I was going to interrupt there and move on to something else, but no, finish what you were saying.
Well, many times I order extra syringes from the compounding pharmacy, and I have the parents give themselves an injection so that they know themselves that it really is not that painful a process. And I'll be honest, I've had 12-year-old kids who were so scared that I had to hold them across my lap in order for the parent to give them the first shot in the office. But invariably, after they have this 2-3 times and they find out that it's not that painful, it's not even anything close to having your blood drawn, it's no big deal for them, and they get used to it. By far and away, I would say that's the case for 95% of the patients that I treat. Occasionally, there is a child that the parent is too anxious about doing it, and the child... They're mentally not prepared for the shot, but the physical discomfort is really very, very minimal.
Okay, now when we first got into the B12 specifically in Dr. Neubrander's research, and you were referring to the toxins and that this facilitates the cleansings of toxins from system. Now, when you and I spoke earlier, I mentioned that after the diagnosis of autism, my grandson's also been diagnosed with celiacs, which is the intolerance to gluten, and multiple food allergies. Has Dr. Neubrander done any research into parallel treatments addressing other dietary, you know, aspects of the diet?
Yes, absolutely. If you go to a DAN conference, which stands for Defeat Autism Now, and they're moving away from that term because it sounds, the people who have high-functioning autism sort of resent that fact that that they have to be defeated. Some people with autism function very well. Temple Grandin is a perfect example of that. But the mainstay for many of the doctors who take a biomedical approach to treating autism is that they do emphasize the diet and healing the gut first. If you're dealing with inflammation and inappropriate absorption through your GI tract, your GI tract is one of the largest immune organs inside the body, and you do have to pay attention to that. Many of the kids have issues with the digestion of milk protein and wheat protein, and many times those things need to be addressed as well. Just as we said earlier, is everybody going to respond to that? It's different. I've had parents come into the office on their first consultation that will say, 2 weeks after I took wheat and dairy out of my child's diet, his eye contact improved. And I've had other parents say, we followed a gluten-free, casein-free, GFCF is the abbreviation for that. We followed the diet religiously for 6 months, and we couldn't tell any difference in our child. So there again, different things work to different capacities on different patients.
No, in my grandson's case, he's clearly celiac.
Yes, it's very important.
Because the gluten intolerance is something for him that's even over and above the autism. So, but after gluten and the various allergens, he's allergic to potatoes and poultry. And as we remove these allergens from his diet, we did notice an improvement in his hyperactivity. It tended to calm him down somewhat, which allowed him to function better in other things. If he slowed down, then his speech would slow down because he's one that talks really fast. And I'm trying to think of how to phrase this. Go ahead with what you were going to say.
Well, I was going to say it doesn't directly relate to autism, but I can sometimes see connections to this. I just read a recently published article from the American Journal of Gastroenterology where they did a double-blind, placebo-controlled study with adults who claimed to have gluten intolerance, and these people had no evidence of actual celiac disease, but when they fed the treatment group and the placebo group muffins that had gluten disguised inside of it, there was a significant difference between the group of people that were sensitive to that. And nobody knew where they were getting gluten or not, and it was a small amount of only 18 grams that was disguised in this muffin. But the people who were sensitive to that had significantly more GI issues. And the summation of the article is, yeah, some people have this. We don't know why, and we can't identify it, but it does seem to make a difference for a lot of people.
Okay, now, in Dr. Neubrander's research, and we're going to take a break here in just a few minutes, but I want to emphasize something. Both yourself and Dr. Neubrander's research emphasizes treatment and response to treatment more than researching into the causes, the idea being that at some point the treatments, effective treatment, gives clues to the cause. Am I correct here?
Well, I think sometimes you can get some suggestion of that. There are different forms of testing that can be done to check for levels of toxic metals that can be done by hair tests. It can be done by a blood test. Many of the autism biomedical practitioners will measure the levels of metals in the urine sample, give a type of detoxifying treatment, and then measure the metals in the urine again that seem to be eliminated from the system after they use that treatment. So there's a number of things that can be utilized to help with treatment besides the B12. The diet that we mentioned, supplementation with trace minerals to make sure, because many of the autistic children have very picky diets and they're probably nutritionally deprived from some of the broad spectrum of vitamins and minerals that they should have in their diet, such as calcium, magnesium, zinc, and selenium are some of the ones that I hear mentioned more frequently. There's times many people seem to respond, many autistic children and those with an associated type of autism that is related to mitochondrial defects respond to hyperbaric oxygen treatments. There's a number of treatments that are available, and when you go to a convention that's put on by the segments of society that address the parents and their ability to treat the patients, it's just so varied, it's hard to take it all in, even when you go to a conference and try to learn more about this.
Okay, well, with this, Dr. Aronson, we're going to take about one 60-minute or 60-second break or so. When we get back, I do want to talk to you. I have questions coming from the audience about finding doctors in their area that use these therapies. So we will take a break here, and we will rejoin the show in about 1 minute.
Can you imagine having banks and credit that serve the community, solvent and free of Wall Street corruption, that create strong local economy and job growth? Banks that put profits right back into the local business and economy, not into far-off foreign investments or high-risk and exotic finance schemes of the super-rich.
Yes, we can.
Can you imagine eliminating income tax, ensuring economic stability, increasing social programs, and improving the standard of living for all Americans while paying off the federal debt?
Yes, we can.
That's right. It's all possible.
Yes.
Can you join us in working towards a solution utilizing principles suggested by our founding fathers through united action and strategies outlined in articles, blogs, and Wiki spaces where you can share and collaborate?
Uh-huh.
Please visit Ellen Brown's website, webofdebt.com, and help us make America's money and future of, by, and for the people once again. Can you do that?
Yes, we can.
Caution, if you are prone to being disturbed by Real Truth and Real Solutions, please continue to consult with your qualified Wall Street cheerleader economist on network television. Side effects for not visiting webofdebt.com include drowsiness, loss of job, loss of control of national finance, loss of country, followed by panic attacks and rude awakenings.
We teach them how to tie their shoes. They teach us how to live our lives. We teach them long division. They teach us how to bank online. Our children will always outgrow us. But for the first time in generations, they may not outlive us. Over the last 25 years, the percent of overweight children aged 6 to 11 has doubled. The percent of overweight teenagers tripled. Obesity kills. Heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, all are linked to obesity, a problem that could be greatly reduced just by having a place to exercise. Right now, people are working hard to put parks and playgrounds where children live, where children will use them. Finding out how you can help is as easy as tying your shoes. Log on to EarthShare.org now, a public service message brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
Hello, this is Jeanette Lefebvre. We're back after the break with Dr. John Aronson, Defeat Autism Now Network doctor. Doctor, as I said before we went into this, I've had questions regarding finding doctors in their area. As you said, Chance's mother came to you, and this wasn't your area of expertise, and asked you to look at this. Are there more doctors already in the network at this time that would simplify that?
I think there is, if you go onto the Autism Research Institute website, for this year still, they are maintaining what's become known as the DAN list. And what it basically is a list of people who have attended previous conferences sponsored by the Autism Research Institute and who have agreed to be listed on their website. And there's a short biographical profile and what their medical qualifications are and what type of treatments they do, and basically, a very simplified approach as to how they deal with patients, and about how long it is to get in to see the person. For because this, it's not a certified list. There's no certifying organization currently for autism treatment. What I would advise the listeners to do is to speak with other parents who have children on the spectrum. There's a number of autism support groups, and a good way to find out a provider who specializes in this treatment is talk to other parents and find out who they see. And you're going to have different philosophies. There's a major medical center in my state, and I refer patients there for evaluations, but I kind of have a love-hate relationship with it. And I will send children there to have evaluations to assess for learning disabilities and things like that. But I've had parents come from there before, and while they're very good at diagnosing and telling what the problem is, they don't embrace these therapies that we've been utilizing about the gluten diet, the hyperbaric oxygen, vitamin supplementation, because there's not the published double-blind, placebo-controlled, multi-centered studies to prove that without a doubt that these work. And what I learn at the autism conferences that I go to, the parents have to be actively involved in this and a strong advocate for their child, and they have to be involved to find out what works and what doesn't work. And one of the speakers at the conference made the point to the parents. He says, each of you has an experiment with one subject, and that's your child. And you have to find someone that you can work with that can try to find out what is helpful. A lot of the things that many parents find helpful, the diets, the supplements, they're not prescription items.
I think that's why Jody came to me, was because she needed a physician to write that prescription for the injectable vitamin. So that is, so you have to find the doctor that's willing to do that.
Okay, so, and those doctors, as you said, can be found on the Autism Research Institute website. Now, one of the other struggles, and I know because, again, through my grandson, that a lot of parents have is because autism has been defined as a cognitive disorder or a behavioral disorder, medical treatments related to autism are not covered under some insurance. Has this been a difficulty for parents that you've been working with, is getting payment for the treatment, or because you're addressing it as a medical issue, it is paid for as a medical issue?
It's a mixed bag of things. Because I'm a physician and a family physician, typically the visits at the office are covered through the parents' insurance. The vitamins and supplements that you can purchase over the counter typically are not covered by insurance. The vitamin B12 injections, I've had mixed experience. Some parents have reported to me that their insurance will reimburse them for the cost of that injectable vitamin. Other insurances won't cover it at all. Let me say this. The cost is not that excessive. Depending upon the age of the child, it depends on the size of the shot. But roughly, it's $85 to $90, including shipping, for a two-month trial of the shots. So it's $1.10 a day. And most parents are willing to venture at $80 to $90 for the initial eight-week trial to see if it helps. And then they can make that decision for themselves, whether it's worthwhile to continue to do that or not.
Now, this also varies from state to state. I'm in Michigan, and Michigan provides a supplement to families under $60,000 a year of about $220 a month, just a flat supplement to help offset costs related to the autism treatment. They provide behavioral therapists that will come into the home at no cost to the family. They provide respite funds for families, and I know this is very different from other states because one of the nightmares, again, is families finding support and ways to pay for many of these things. Also in my state, there's been a bill introduced that requires insurance companies to pay for autism-related medical treatment, because if it's a medical treatment, it's a medical treatment. Are you aware of these in other places?
Well,
go ahead.
It's going to vary a lot from state to state and with the individual insurance plans. I know I've had one of my patients, the father told me he was able to get funding for a three-wheeled bicycle for his 20-something son with autism. He was able to get a small mini trampoline to help him get physical exercise and be active through such a program in Iowa. Iowa recently, at the state legislature last year, they passed a law that it only applied to state employees, but that it was supposed to cover some of those associated items that are needed for treatment. What the insurance companies will claim a lot of times is, well, this is experimental. This hasn't been proven to be effective. Therefore, we're not going to cover it because it's not mainstream, basically.
Okay, now I'm getting some questions from the audience here, not real specific. We were not going to go really deeply into the causes of autism, but of course mercury in vaccines, particularly thimerosal, has been named a culprit. And I'm going to relate this back to something you said earlier. You were referring to that this facilitates getting rid of toxins. Now, mercury being a toxin, And this in the same question they have, so what would your opinion of treatments like chelation therapy be?
I have heard reports of the chelation therapy being helpful at times. I've seen at conferences I've gone to, there was a study that correlated the rates of the likelihood of a child having autism depending on how many amalgam fillings the mother had in her mouth when she was pregnant with the child, that the ones, the mother who had a higher amount had perhaps a greater risk than the mother who didn't have any. So there again, I think it's hard to identify a particular cause, and it's probably a combination of causes that come together. The theory that I've heard that makes the most sense to me is that some children have a, what shall we say, is a minor genetic aberration or abnormality that in the face of some kind of environmental trigger or infectious trigger then creates a vicious cycle of increased inflammation that shall we say, spirals downward and then creates more difficulty with the neurologic functioning. There's not going to be any one cause that's going to identify all the different kids that have autism, and I think that's one of the reasons that it's difficult to do research, is because the autistic population, the children who are affected by this, they're not uniform, and there's different factors that come into play on different children, and science is just not advanced to the point that, you know, we can reach off the shelf and say, oh, let's do this test number 1, 2, 3, 4, and that'll tell us what it is. There's thousands of different abnormalities that can be present, and sometimes it's a combination of those that cause things to go, to cause the children to be affected.
Yeah, in my grandson's case, he was born with something called a tethered spinal cord, resulting in surgery requiring complete anesthesia that lasted multiple hours at the age of 3 months. We've always believed in the multiple suspect. My son-in-law is convinced it's food additives. The sheer number of, if you look at any box of food you buy in the market, and can you tell yourself for sure you know what all those things are? So,
and
again, I don't know of any parent who deals with autism that any longer buys into the single factor theory. It's too many kids from too many different backgrounds and too many impinging factors, and some have multiple children with autism. Some, like my grandson, is the only autism we've ever encountered within the family. So there's multiple factors, and that alone is a show. Go ahead.
Yeah. One of the conferences I went to, a father was coming up and speaking to the presenter afterwards, and they had mentioned something about vaccines during the presentation, I think, and the father says, vaccines can't be it because my son has never had any vaccine and he still has autism. So, but that's not to say that somewhere down the line, I know this is, you know, this gets hashed over and over and over, and it's never going to be settled between the two parts, but there's just too many parents have told me after my son had blank, blank, blank shot, they lost, they stopped making eye contact 2 weeks later.
Yeah, when we were talking last Friday, you mentioned that one of the problems with getting these double-blind studies done is once the child shows improvement, they're in the part of the study where they're receiving the B12, and then the parents are informed, well, we're going to have to take them off and flip it. The other children will receive it and your child won't. They won't follow through because they don't want to remove something that has shown obvious improvement.
Right. And so if you can't complete the study according to your design, you're not going to meet the standards for the medical journals to publish the study because they, you know, they'll say your research isn't quality. I want to tell one other anecdotal story about another doctor who was a pediatrician, and she was giving a presentation at a conference, and one of her patients was gone on vacation, got sick with diarrhea, called back to the pediatrician for advice as to what to do. Child had autism, by the way. And so didn't even talk to the doctor. The nurse says, well, put him on clear liquids for a couple of days and don't have him give any milk. Took dairy away from his diet, and he started talking. And they thought, well, this, you know, this is just a coincidence. So then they put dairy back into his diet, and he stopped talking. And then they took dairy out of his diet again, and he started talking again. Now, for that child, that one thing made a profound difference. And, you know, so you don't know until you try. You don't know until you try something like that. And I think that's kind of one of the take-home messages I think that parents need to know is to, you know, don't do nothing. Go and try something. And there's oodles of resources for parents on the internet now where they can read about some of these treatments that other people have had success with and talk with other parents. They can help guide them. They're at the conferences that are put on by the Autism Research Institute, they have sessions specifically for that, that says for new parents just getting started, this is the way you should approach it.
Okay, so the parent is that child's best advocate and the first line in finding what works for that particular child.
I think so, yes. I mean, and it's always helpful if you have someone who's experienced with this to help guide that for them. And I think the tendency that I detect from a lot of parents is, you know, they'll say, oh, I want to do this and this and this and this and this and this. And that's where I go back to what I had said earlier. Okay, yes, let's keep all those in mind, but let's write them down and let's approach this in a methodical and logical fashion and do one thing at a time so we kind of know what does what, because not every treatment is going to work, and but some will. I've had some parents, we started with the methyl B12 injections and their child did well, and we did that for 8 weeks, and then we come on and start some other supplements 8 weeks later. I've suggested sometimes that cod liver oil with the essential fatty acids are help promote proper development in the brain. And I've had one parent tell me that he says, I think my child got just as much benefit from the cod liver oil as they did from the B12 shots.
So there's a wide variables in there. And again, it's each parent knows their child best, and they are with that child 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and they will notice changes more rapidly than the physician that sees them in the office for 20 minutes or so once a month. Or even more often, although right. It seems from what I've read of you, you tend to spend a great deal of time with your patients. One of the things that you get high praise for is that you your focus on the patient and their awareness that you're concentrating on them and their needs is impressive. Now, we're getting close to the end of our time here. We're down to about... Go ahead.
I've had more than one parent say to me, you're the first doctor that sat and listened to what I had to say. So I guess that's a compliment.
Well, I've always advocated to parents that if you don't feel that the doctor is listening to what you have to say, perhaps you need to look for another doctor. Not anything against the medical profession, but some are just more pressed for time and things like that. Now, we're down to the last couple of minutes. Was there anything that we missed that you wanted to emphasize for our audience? It is the Autism Research Institute where the information that you've provided us with tonight can be found and support for parents.
Yeah, there's a number of organizations. There's Autism One, there's TACA, Talk About, I can't even think of what the acronym is. But the Autism Research Institute was founded by Dr. Bernard Remlin, who had an autistic child, and he found a number of these initial treatments of supplements that seemed to be helpful. And that's a very good place to start. There's a big conference in Atlanta, Georgia, in April of this year. They're having another one in Las Vegas in October. And there's always a large conference in Chicago at the end of May. And if there's parents out there that want to get more information, I strongly suggest to them to try to get to one of those, because they will be inundated with information, and that can be a little daunting at first because it's so much, but they can really learn a lot by going to one of those.
Okay, and as like I said, and even in the absence of a DAN network doctor in their area, parents can still do as Chance's parents did and take this information to their physician and ask for help. So we are reaching. Go ahead.
They certainly can do that, and, you know, it's physicians sometimes are set in their ways, and some are willing to be flexible, and some, if they don't understand it, they don't want to deal with it. And I guess you just have to ask that question up front and keep looking until you find someone that will be willing to work with you.
Okay, well, we are out of time. I want to thank you so much, Dr. Aronson, for the information tonight, for being here with us, for sharing with us the developments in autism treatment. A lot of parents aren't aware that there's any treatment other than behavioral therapy. Increasing numbers of families are affected by autism each year, and information is the only tool they have to help their children reach some level of function and productivity. Now, to our audience, please join Bassema Farhat on her return next week to The People Speak with her guest Jerry Winstrom, artist and author of The Inspired Heart, and Angelo Henderson, possibly Pulitzer Prize-winning broadcast print journalist, joins us to celebrate Black History Month. Next week on The People Speak radio show on BBS Radio, 8:55 to 9:55 Eastern Standard Time. Thank you all, and have a good night.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.